Thought Leadership Studio.
You're listening to Thought Leadership Studio, the podcast that helps you master high-level positive mass influence to create distinctive business niches, captivate an audience, grow your following, and change the game by changing the frame with strategic thought leadership.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Welcome back to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this is episode 72, Digital Marketing Mastery, an Entrepreneurial Evolution with Vito Santoro, charting the journey from SEO expertise to digital marketing innovation and self-mastery in business. What this episode will do for you is learn about Vito Santoro's, otherwise known as V. Michael Santoro's, entrepreneurial journey. Dive into his extensive experience in SEO and digital marketing, tracing his path from founding innovative companies to becoming a thought leader in the digital space. Learn about building a strong online brand. Unpack Vito's strategies for establishing a powerful online presence, emphasizing the critical role of SEO and content in creating brand authority and trust. Learn about strategic thought leadership. Learn how Vito leverages his expertise to guide entrepreneurs from working in their business to working on their business, focusing on productivity and customer-centric solutions. Learn about partnerships and trust by exploring Vito's approach to cultivating lasting relationships with customers through trust and mutual respect, and how this foundation is key to business success. Learn about overcoming entrepreneurial challenges by gaining insight into the hurdles Vito's faced and how perseverance and adaptability have been vital to his achievements. And learn about Vito's and my upcoming collaboration, the groundbreaking program integrating strategic thought leadership with AI-assisted SEO, a partnership designed to empower entrepreneurs with cutting-edge strategies for digital dominance. But before we dive more deeply into this episode, in case you're new here, consider that I created the Thought Leadership Studio podcast to help listeners improve their thought leadership skills. So whether or not you consider yourself a thought leader at this point, consider that I've come to the conclusion that the practice of strategic thought leadership is now fundamental to effective marketing and helpful in any area of positive influence. It's about leading an audience to embrace a unique perspective that gives them more value. So this podcast is designed to provide an accelerated training process. And an important part of this is having models of excellence, for which I provide interviews of people who excel in one or more areas relevant to strategic thought leadership. And if you're listening on an app, make sure you visit the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It's linked in the episode description for a summary of the episode with a curated transcript, a story and images, and additional resources and offers. In this episode of Thought Leadership Studio, I'm excited to introduce Vito Michael Santoro, my good friend. Vito is an expert with over 18 years in SEO and digital marketing. His career showcases his deep understanding of digital strategy and innovation, particularly through his ventures like BrandVelocity.io and the pioneering Vedas LLC. His work, recognized by U.S. Patent for Interactive Video Technology, highlights his ability to blend technology with impactful marketing solutions. In our conversation, Vito emphasizes the essence of building a strong online brand and the pivotal role of thought leadership in today's digital ecosystem. He stresses the importance of shifting from being deeply involved in business operations to adopting a strategic overview focused on solving customer problems and enhancing productivity. Vito believes in the power of trust and partnerships with customers, underlined by effective content and SEO strategies that establish brand authority. His advice to entrepreneurs includes observing their business closely, listening to customers, respecting employees, and persisting through challenges. Additionally, Vito and I, your humble host, Chris McNeil, have collaborated on a unique program that combines strategic thought leadership with AI-assisted SEO. This partnership aims to leverage our collective expertise to provide entrepreneurs with innovative strategies for achieving significant online presence and engagement achievable no other way than I know of. So join us as we delve into Vito's journey and explore how our collaborative effort can offer a new dimension to digital marketing and brand building. Without further ado, let's jump right into the interview.
Thought Leadership Studio.
So I'm your host of Thought Leadership Studio, Chris McNeil, and I'm sitting here across Zoom with Vito, otherwise known as V. Michael Santoro, who is a seasoned SEO expert with over 18 years experience in business development and digital marketing. He also founded VEDAZ LLC, which developed an interactive video platform that was awarded a U.S. patent in 2017 for its real-time call-to-action video technology. And they successfully exited the company in 2020. As an award-winning published author, including the book Rite of Passage about the entrepreneurial journey and all these challenges we face and the self-mastery aspects of it. And he's been recognized for his expertise in the industry and was twice featured in Authority Magazine. His contributions have been featured in top-tier publications such as Forbes, Inc., American Express, Yahoo Finance, and several others. And he is also the founder of BrandVelocity.io. Welcome, Vito. Great to have you here.
Thanks for the invitation, Chris. Look forward to participating.
My pleasure. So to get our audience up to speed, those that may not be familiar with your work so far, was there a pivotal moment in your own entrepreneurial journey that was a defining event or set of circumstances that's led you to where you are now, writing books like Rite of Passage for the Entrepreneur, running companies like BrandVelocity.io, and doing this great work in online marketing that you're doing?
Well, to be honest with you, I started around 2004 with search engine optimization. A friend of mine I worked with, because I was in high tech, came out with a product that was a child safety product, and he had a difficult time getting it into retail. And he thought, I talked to him that I was just getting involved with, building websites and the like. And I said, why don't I try to sell it online? He had no clue, right, to the degree of what the internet can provide at the time. And I ended up building the website and then learning about search engine optimization. And I just dominated all the search engines for the search phrase. And I ended up earning enough through selling that product to put my daughter through Florida State University.
Wow.
So I was hooked. From there, I migrated into helping local businesses to increase their leads and the like. And as we were getting towards the end of that cycle, we realized that video was very important because we would screen record their website and we'd use it for sales. But the problem was there was no way of capturing the lead unless they replied to the email. We were sending them to YouTube and the like, and we knew that wasn't good for really running a business. So we had this idea, what if the video can actually do the lead capture? And we looked around for a solution, couldn't find one. So we ended up using the revenue we were generating from the SEO business to start VEDAZ, which was an interactive video platform. And we built that and we went through from a whiteboard or flip chart at the time, right through exit. So I lived all the trials and tribulations of entrepreneurship. And the reason I ended up writing the book was I realized that our internal struggle, our fear, our, you know, the way we have the mental challenges of doing things was actually one of the biggest things that can be your challenge to success. And I thought if I could document my journey as well as other entrepreneurs and be honest about it, people, I think I wanted to connect with the reader. And it ended up winning an award that the book did for its social impact because I hit on topics that formerly they might have been talked about in a psychology book, but most of the entrepreneur books were written on how to do a, you know, a term sheet or a, you know, one of, you know, the usual marketing things or structure in a company or whatever. And I wanted to kind of bring the two together and talk about things that are unexpected challenges along the way. And, you know, what we did and just some suggestions.
That's awesome. So through that, and from reading the book, I'm in the midst of it and I'm loving it. And to the listener, you want to get Rite of Passage, and I'm linking to it on the episode page. As it led to an awareness of entrepreneurism, maybe as a path to self-mastery?
It really does.
Or mental game?
Yeah, it really is. You know, you can be your own worst enemy, or your ego can get in the way and cause you to make poor decisions. Your ego in managing, maybe even though you hire people that are smarter than you, you're threatened by it. A lot of things that can interfere because you're starting something brand new as an entrepreneur. And you have to look at it like you had a child and a baby, and you have to really work and nurture and do what's best for it and put your ego in your back pocket. Also, I do a part on reinventing your, I call it reinventing your comfort zone. We love to be in our comfort zone. And when things happen outside the comfort zone, we tend to kind of either distract from it or try to work on what we know versus what we need. And unless you're aware of that, because if you're in your comfort zone, the next zone up is fear. So that's why I talk about how fear can be a major inhibitor, because you're doing what you know. And when you have to get out of it, the next level up is the learning zone. And if you live more in the learning zone and you become more of an observer than a participant, you're going to increase your skill sets. You're going to know how to talk with resources who maybe can do things, and you become a better entrepreneur. You have a better chance of being successful.
How would you rate the potential success of an entrepreneur who stays in the comfort zone versus one who, through self-discipline or self-mastery, stays in the learning zone more?
99.9% failure if you remain in your comfort zone. Because even if you're, let's say you're a great, you work in a product development. Let's say you come up with a way, and you're with a large company and they don't want to do things, that you come up with an idea that could be a, in your mind, a revolutionary product, right? The thing is, if you don't have a mind shift from a person who's an employee to that of a business owner, you're going to be working in your comfort zone. You're going to build a product, but nobody cares. Okay. You know, you've really got to get out there, and there's a multitude of skill and thought process and everything that you need as a business owner, not as an entrepreneur. And you're going to hit struggles. There's no question. You know, a lot of people fear, well, if I share this idea, somebody will steal it. The idea, the truth is, unless you have tons of revenue and traction, no one's going to steal it. They don't want to do the work. They'd either rather buy you or look at the way you're doing it, go after your market and try to put you out of business. Those are the two choices. But no, if you're a successful entrepreneur, your chances are still difficult because it's all based on the marketplace. If people love what you do and they're willing to buy it, you're successful. If you love what you do and no one else does, you're going to fail.
So there's a good example of a disempowering belief. This, if I love it, everybody must love it, without doing that check for market fit. I mean, I imagine there's a whole set of typical common belief systems that might help define that comfort zone that we have to challenge within ourselves on the entrepreneurial journey. What might be some others that you have run across or that would lend themselves to the discussion?
You know, you just mentioned something, that our subconscious is in control a lot of times. And we're conditioned from birth with all kinds of stuff. And it's subconscious. So you're not really thinking about it when you're doing it. You're reacting, or your behavior is based on your subconscious. So a lot of these beliefs that you mentioned are inhibitors. You know, you may get lucky and have a few that really work, but in 80% of it's in the way. It's kind of like running a race with hurdles. That's what entrepreneurs like. And you're going to trip over hurdles as you're going. You can't keep up. But a lot of it is your own subconscious that is your biggest, it holds you back. It holds you back because you're doing things without realizing it. And unless you're conscious of it or work with someone like yourself to bring out a lot of the important things and take your customer first and not have an ego, you're going to fail.
Yeah, you mentioned the ego issue several times, and obviously that's a big impediment in the entrepreneurial journey. So if it's all about me, then what about the customer?
That's correct.
And what about my team? What about my collaborators? You know, what would you suggest for people on the entrepreneurial journey and wherever they're at on the journey, unless they've already cashed out and they're living on an island, they're facing personal growth challenges along the way, for developing more of this self-awareness to recognize these things that maybe have been subconscious until they end up becoming an obstacle on the journey?
Yeah, you know, self-actualization is really an important part, which is the hardest thing. It's like extracting a wisdom tooth, right? You know, you have to really take a hard look. And one way I dealt with it was I started a management program that I call Lead, Follow, or Get Out of the Way. And I believe an entrepreneur should have a flat organization. You shouldn't build this organization before you know what the customer is going to buy, and you need to staff accordingly. But there's going to be things that you do well that you can control. There's going to be things that other people can do better than you. They have the skill or whatever. And there's other times you don't have a clue, but you know it's necessary. And you need to manage it, not micromanage, but you need to make sure that the objectives are being accomplished. But sometimes you got to get out of the way and let people, it builds leaders within your company if you follow that kind of structure, because they have ownership. If people take ownership of something and they're proud of it and they feel responsible for it, they do better. Or they're the wrong match, but you're going to know right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you try to control everything and you're because of who you are, and believe me, a lot of it, it's not even age related. There are people that have been egomaniacs their whole life, you know, and they don't get it, but they're kind of narcissistic in a way, and they think it's my way or the highway, and they end up with a lot of turnover and they fail.
Yeah, that's definitely an issue in business, but it's those who give themselves to a higher purpose.
That's correct.
They can really find the satisfaction, and maybe it becomes more like the hero's journey when every obstacle or the guardians of the threshold to your personal growth. And
right.
And through that personal growth is intrinsically rewarding in itself.
Yep.
Just like the attitude about athletics. Some people look at athletics like beat the other team, but you know, enlightened athletes look at it like we are there to challenge each other to be our best.
Right.
To bring out the best in each other. And that's true sportsmanship in that arena. And now you've talked about the difference between things that are motion and things that are productivity.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important distinction that I think a lot of people miss in business, because we feel like we're busy, so mm-hmm. we must be achieving. But if the busyness isn't leading somewhere.
That's correct.
How can you shine some more light on that and how to recognize that in ourselves, and maybe give us a story or two of the
sure. You know, it was interesting when I was doing some research for the book, there was a small business site survey they did, and they interviewed so many different people in business on productivity. That was it. What do you do? And they had a checklist of all the different things that people said. And they said out of a 9-hour workday, about an hour and 45 minutes was productive. And they had checking email, reading the newspaper. I mean, people were very honest. My favorite one was looking for a new job. That was on the list as well.
That's not a good sign.
You know, and once I really looked at it, you could be mentally engaged, and all that means is that I'm thinking about it and I'll get to it tomorrow, which is zero, right? But as you dig deeper, productivity is interesting. And when you're in your comfort zone, I'll tie that back in. With productivity, there's two kinds of productivity, okay? One of them is, it's more where you're checking email, you're going to social, it's motion disguised as productivity, right? And what happens when you're in your comfort zone, if something comes up that you don't feel comfortable with, you go check your email, you check social media, you get on endless conference calls that don't go anywhere. And at the end of the day, you feel you really worked. But the question is, did you move your business forward? That's true productivity. If you're completing objectives, if your business is really going to benefit from what you've done, and you've helped your customers, and you know that because you're checking to make sure they're happy, that's true productivity, you know? Or doing marketing where, you know, you post some Instagram photos or something and you're getting all these followers, but you don't get any sales. I consider that motion. It might be good for branding, you know, to get out there and get visible. That's kind of like the misnomer about branding, right? That you're out there and everybody sees you, they have to see it seven times. There's some truth to that. But if it's not leading to a conversion or acquiring a new customer, what have you really provided the end user other than some entertainment? Absolutely. Have you helped them solve a problem? Have you given them some information that they didn't know where you build trust? That's the true productivity.
And so a lot of that is about working on your business instead of just in your business, isn't it?
That's correct.
And how would you help, say, the listener who's running a business? And even if you're a solopreneur, it's a business. There are systems, there are processes, whether we've defined them as such or not, whether we've documented them as such or not, or habits become processes that can be approved by looking at them, working on it instead of just doing things out of habit. Right. So I think that would apply to just about any listener. But how do you know the difference between working on the business and in the business? And what would you offer our listeners as some examples to help ground it in something tangible?
Working in the business means you're doing a lot of hands-on work, for example. Like if you have a finance background, you love looking at the numbers and doing your Excel spreadsheet. Well, the rest of the business is being neglected in a lot of ways. And like, because most solopreneurs or startups, whatever, don't have a big staff, right? So if you're working in your business, you're doing what you think is important because you have control over that or skill, but you're not really looking at holistically at the business. Working on the business means that you're managing the whole business. You're looking at it. You know what you can do to help, but also you know what to do to outsource. Like, for example, we outsourced all our finance and accounting. You can hire inexpensive resources to help, but you have to know what you need. Working on a business means I understand that I need this financial information tracked or however you're going to do it. The other thing we did is we invested in lower cost software. There's two software we'll get to in a second, but as it comes back. But what we decided to do, rather than try to hire more people for tech support, we wrote the system so that their input could come through our user interface and broadcast to our end user, to our staff, including our developer. So we can, without having email, we got rid of email with the customers. We didn't set up a help desk because then you got to train help desk people that can leave. So we set it up so that we could automatically automate any kind of customer service. So you could do things like that cost effectively, to kind of improve your systems so that you don't have to work in the business all the time. But knowing good outsourcers is really important, but they have to work as a team. Like you have to make sure you share the objectives and you don't have a lot of silos working on things that don't come together. So you're kind of working on the business being a maestro, right? And you're making sure you understand the necessity and you're bringing the resources together in order to do it. But we had to do that because we didn't have the investment money to build more staff. So we had to work smarter in order to automate things. And Slack, I'm sorry, we use Slack. It just came to me.
Yes, I know Slack.
And Intercom. It was Slack and Intercom. Intercom was a chat feature. We integrated it.
Yes.
You can use Zapier. It's all coming back now with Zapier to tie it all together. So if a client came or if a customer was on our user interface and had a question or whatever, they could get into chat, but it also broadcasts to developers, us, and we can immediately get back. And they love that because they came first, right? And how we did things. Does that answer your question?
Well, it does. And it also suggests a couple of threads that might be interesting to our listeners, I think are really relevant to anyone in online influence or business in general. And one is that whole system perspective, the shift in perspective, where you're not looking at your business from inside a role in the business that might fit in a job description or organization chart. You're stepping back and looking at it as a whole.
That's correct.
And of course, looking at it, how the customer sees it as a whole suggests things as well as looking at it as a system to system engineer as a whole. Do you find that's uncommon in business people starting out who are struggling along the early stages of the entrepreneurial journey? Is that kind of a pivot point, or how do you see that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and talking to a lot of entrepreneurs, I think we all start out in some way and then we mature, you know, but a lot of times people are product-based rather than solution-based. And I think one of the most, especially if you're in B2B, a solution-based approach is much better because you're doing problem solving and almost consulting, and your product is part of the solution, right? As opposed to a lot of companies, what they do is they come in and say, look at all the features and what it can do. And they haven't even established if the customer even needs it or what problem they may. And they leave it up to the customer to try to figure it out. And that's why their conversions are low. You need to lead the customer through, confirm a problem, right, that they're having. They're searching Google for solutions all the time, right? And if you really do your homework, you talk to your customer base or potential customers, they should be excited about what you're doing because you're solving an issue for them. And it may not all just be more money. It might be just improving systems, cutting costs. There's a lot of benefits to a business that you can provide, but you have to identify it and be able to understand the niche and what they're trying to accomplish. And while you're doing what you're doing. Clarity is so key. That's like the most important point. Don't be impressed with what you're saying to impress people. Be impressed by the clarity that you're communicating to people so they understand what you're saying.
Well, and that you empower them and help them get more of what's important to them. So what I'm getting, part of this is entering the customer story, knowing the customer, the stories they play in their heads about the challenges they face in their life, what they're trying to achieve that maybe you could help them achieve. As opposed to just come at them out of the cold, blue, vast space with something that is completely alien that they may not have considered. So entering the customer story is part of it, and that I'm getting just the whole empathy piece about thinking
that's correct.
From the customer, as the customer, looking at your business from the outside in. Seeing the whole of your business as a system instead of getting stuck in silos. What are some other examples of the shift in perspective or mental skills that an entrepreneur needs to succeed at the highest level?
When we were most successful is when a customer didn't view us as a vendor, but rather as a partner. Mm-hmm. That's a major thing that goes on, because if you're a vendor, you're providing some kind of solution that they need at the time. But you're not really building a relationship with that, right? And someone else could come along with an equal system, underbid you. And if it's not something that's of a critical solution, they're gonna go after price. But if you come in and you're a partner and you're actually coaching them, for lack of a better term, on some of the things that they could also do, even if it's through another vendor, okay, we've gotten more business because we actually suggested some other company that could do a better job. But the credibility led to more leads, and that trust factor, you cannot underestimate the importance of trust, because that's loyalty. And customers will stay with you if they feel that you're a partner and you're helping them.
Well, wouldn't that come from the belief system that I succeed best by putting the customer's needs ahead of my own?
Right.
And that plays into, why are we in business? Are we in business just to make money, or are we in business to bring something new to market that enriches people's lives at a higher level? And that brings satisfaction in itself, with money a happy side benefit of that.
Sure. In fact, there was one statistic that companies were paying $10 to acquire a new customer for every 50 cents or a dollar that they were spending on their current customer base. So they were always out looking for new business, and they were neglecting their customer base until the customer wanted to leave. Then they dropped all these customer support resources on, and it came across that it was self-serving. You only want my money. And that money is important, but if you help people first, the money will follow.
I think we've all experienced that phenomenon through things like cell phone providers.
Yep.
Where suddenly we become important, we're about to change things. Or
yep.
Wasn't there a viral video about this nightmare call to Comcast when somebody was just trying to switch cable companies, as cable at the time was their thing, and the person put them through hell?
That's so funny. It really is, you know, because honestly, even the phone systems, I think, were created anti-customer on a lot of these businesses. Like when you call in, you can't really talk to someone. You've got to go through all this process, and half the things that they're saying you can have access to in their automated system aren't what you're looking to do.
Right.
Then they put you on hold for 20 minutes.
Right.
Okay, it just happened to my sister. She was so upset. They said they were going to change her internet solution or whatever it was to give her a better deal because she was calling about the bill. They go through all this, kept her on, disconnected her, and then she was so frustrated. It was last night. Finally, they sent her an email, and it was a more expensive plan than what she had in the email. When they, you know, I mean, it was a cluster. But that's typical of a lot of big companies. And the good thing about startups, even though there's pain, and you're smaller because you're getting started, you want to get more traction or whatever, you have a real good opportunity to set the culture that it's customer first, and you maintain that no matter how big you get.
Mm-hmm. And that's a huge strategic advantage, but it's counterintuitive to top down thinkers, which is how we end up with these voicemail labyrinths that make us extremely angry for putting us through the ringer just to save 2 minutes of one of their staff people's time instead of the half an hour of our time as a customer.
Right.
But they don't realize that they're just really creating more what I've heard called failure demand. That was John Seddon's term, who's on the podcast a few months ago, is that these call centers create lots of failure demand. So 80% of the calls are people calling back to solve a problem that could have been solved on the first call.
Exactly.
And you think, oh, customers love us, we're getting all these calls. It's like, no, that's people calling ticked off because you didn't solve the problem, which is a huge amount of waste. And when you flush out that waste, but you're pointing out that as founders, we have the opportunity to design it right to start with. And to see our business through the customer's point of view and remove friction instead of adding friction.
It goes with product development too. I've seen a lot of software service companies, they build things in a vacuum, and then they have to re-engineer everything when they finally get to the marketplace. Instead of starting there and doing it right the first time, they work in a vacuum. And they think, because I'm a techie or whatever, I'm building this thing that's great and they want it. But see, they haven't learned yet that people buy what they want, not what they need. And if you can address the want based on a problem or whatever else that they, you know, go after the pain. Vitamins don't sell. Vitamins you could take or not take. Pain, aspirin sells. So start with a problem that's solvable, easy to understand, right? And get your customer to trust you. And that's a really good foundation to start building a company, because otherwise it's nailing your foot to the floor and running faster.
Yeah. Or if you're building something innovative that doesn't exist yet, it still needs to be based on a pain point. And then your job might be to do what we call strategic thought leadership, is to lead the customer to see you have this pain, you may not have thought of this way to address it, or you have this unmet value.
Exactly.
What you're currently doing isn't satisfying your need for confidence or surety or comfort or whatever value you're trying to satisfy with it. And there's another way that can do that for you. Then our marketing becomes so much more meaningful. And speaking of which, you got some deep chops in search engine optimization.
Mm-hmm.
And to the listener, you know, Vito and I are working on a collaborative project that's really exciting, that's going to draw on some of these resources and combine it with strategic thought leadership. But for, you know, everybody's got to have an online presence these days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you're just do government contracts and you're built out for X number of decades and you're fine. That's a rare example. Everybody else has to be concerned about getting traffic online. And we know the game is changing now with artificial intelligence answering some of the questions that search engines used to answer for some people, at least. We've got to also write our copy, write our persuasion, write our helpful content, our empowering content for AI and for search engines like Google. What do you think is relevant for the typical person listening who would be have some really good chops in business, but may not have the deep understanding of the technical side, especially of search engine optimization and what that can mean to their business?
To put it into business terms, if I may, okay. Google, it's getting to the point we have to put a seatbelt on when we search Google with all the changes. In March now, just now in 2024, they had a major update that crushed all the general AI content as well as the thin content that people are putting online, which is we refer to as the noise or clutter. Everybody's putting in. One of the major stats was that over 98% of all this content that's published is never seen or read.
Wow.
So it's all this, motion going on. But what Google wants and what's really important is they want you to build your brand. Established brands get rankings, and that's the real first step. A lot of people, they go after keywords to try to rank for low competition keywords. That's really changing to more topical authority. Google wants to view you as an expert in your niche. And topping in like what we've talked about, getting the content right that distinguishes you or differentiates you from others in the clutter, that's going to be able to get you to own your brand. And why you want to do that as well, besides getting Google's love, customers now control the sales cycle. They go online, they research content, but even companies now, if they see that, oh, this looks pretty good, even if it's an ad or whatever it is, they're going to do a Google search and social media search and whatever to see who you are. And if you don't have the authority through really unique content and you don't build trust before they contact you, they're not going to contact you. To put it in perspective, in 2024, LinkedIn is your resume. No matter who you are, you have to have a resume online. Your digital presence, which they call an entity, is anything that's even mentioned to you online. That's your portfolio. And Google page one for your brand is now your business card. And that's probably the most important thing, because we're testing now different ways of brand building, and that's where Brand Velocity came in. And I did this on my own for my own brand, and I had a couple of clients that wanted to participate. And we built all the infrastructure and everything. And our brands didn't get hurt with all the Google updates. So we know there's a method to the madness and the tortoise wins the race. But also with the thought leadership approach, the content coming out could really be influential with closing new business. Because when they go to Google and you see a whole page dedicated to that business, and your competitors have maybe a Facebook, a LinkedIn, an Instagram, maybe a website, it's like static brochures, right? It's not going to happen. People need to trust, and they need to view you as an authority in your niche, and then they'll contact you. And having a strong brand is very, very important, because people buy from people. They don't buy from companies. Think about a stockbroker. If they leave one major firm and they go to another major firm, people follow the broker because they trust them. They don't stay with the company. Mm-hmm. So you have to create the relationship with the individual. And that's where the customer comes in. And if you're talking with your content to them, the way we discuss with the thought leadership approach, mm-hmm. if you connect with people, they say they understand me. And look at how they're helping me before I even contact them. You got the business. And that's the model that you need to follow in 2024 and beyond.
That's powerful. And, you know, we talked recently about that funny scene in Woody Allen's movie, Small Time Crooks.
You got to tell that story.
Yeah, it's where Woody and his cohorts have this plan to rob a bank. They figure out they need to burrow under the city through a couple streets to get to the bank vault. They need a front. So Woody's wife, I think Mia Farrow played her in this movie, I don't remember, but it was really good making cookies. So he created a cookie shop just as a front to drill underground to get to the bank. And they're making no progress to get to the bank. They're hitting water lines and getting flooded and all these hilarious scenes. Meanwhile, they're paying very little attention to the fact these cookies are a huge hit. And there's lines miles long of people coming to buy these cookies while they're still trying to dig their way through concrete. And to me, that's like a wonderful analogy or metaphor for people who think, oh, you just, you know, buy your way to interrupt people with ads when they're ready to buy, when there's all these people researching your product or service category, looking to learn what to buy, looking to refine their criteria, trying to be a more educated customer. 81 to 89%, according to the studies I've seen, do online research before any major purchase, even an offline purchase. But because it's off the radar, they don't see that until somebody's ready to buy. They pay no attention to it and let their competitors educate them. And that's a huge opportunity. So how do we, as business people, get out of the basement trying to dig our way and getting nowhere through concrete to see this huge line of people outside that are researching what we're doing? And how does that play into to the online presence that we're talking about?
Wow, that's an interesting question. And one point, I'll get into that, but even people who want to advertise, advertising is okay, but it's going to get more expensive. And if you don't have the brand positioning that we just mentioned, mm-hmm. okay, they're not going to convert. People are still going to look at all these companies. So you're spending this motion money, and you're not really seeing the level of conversions that you can. It's only going to get more expensive. So you've got to start somewhere. So could you rephrase that? I'm sorry, I got off just to follow up. What was your question again? Just
how does it, looking at the change in mindset, because it's still prevalent, of somebody hasn't spent the time building this organic authority of creating true thought leadership where they're helping a marketplace or an audience see things differently that helps them see their product or service in a better light too. And they don't even think about that because they just want to snipe at people who are ready to buy without this organic presence. How does that relate to what we're talking about with having the internet be your calling card, your brochure, your brand authority?
You know, it's a double-edged, you need both parts. You need the thought leadership approach to content development, mm-hmm. and then you need to get through the noise. Mm-hmm. Right. And because if you get through the noise with junk, you're not going to convert. If you create great content that's on your website and no one could find you, it's not going to help. You need it. That's why we're partnering. Right. Yeah. We need to have both pieces. And I had the piece with the digital marketing, but I'm looking at, people doing clients. They're doing AI content with ChatGPT or whatever, and they're just blasting through, pressing the easy button. Now they just got crushed.
Yeah.
And everything. So the way we approach it is your brand comes first. That's the first step. And we establish a branded foundation in order to make sure that Google gets the signals that you're serious about your business. We also automate the part where when you're taking your new thought leadership content on your blog, mm-hmm. and you're pressing publish, it's automatically syndicated or distributed across a network of over 20 integrated sites with your content. What that does is it expands your digital entity, where now people are going to find that content and then they're going to all lead back to your website. But you have to be careful because Google gives a lot of penalties if you're doing SEO stuff that's old or what you shouldn't do. They also have manual penalties where they can send someone in and check it out. So you always want to protect. It's like your aircraft carrier and you got all the boats around it. So by having the network, you're building the authority of all these other sites that are public blogs that are all linking to your site, which helps raise all boats. And the what you do is you end up controlling page one, right? I just tested it. I took, there's a term that we use, it's called parasite, but I wanted to test it. And I wrote an original article, I published it on this platform, and within 3 days, it's on page one for my brand.
Wow.
Okay, the Authority Magazine interviews, they rank not only for my brand, but my name on you know, because it's, again, it's the authority and trust. Mm-hmm. Google rewards that. They really do.
So you're not talking about tricking search engines. You're talking about positive amplification of helpful content so more people
can help
and buy it.
Yeah, you've got to amplify your content, but it means more than just putting a link on social media like Facebook or whatever. There's mm-hmm. a lot more to it. And what we've discussed, what you and I have discussed, is by taking away the technical pain of doing this and doing the infrastructure correctly, companies could depend now on doing their content correctly according to the thought leadership strategy, mm-hmm. so that when they put it in, the amplification is built into it, so that they're building their brand, they're getting across the platforms, they're building trust, and it's all based on topical authority. What's also changed, Google used to be just keyword specific. So if it was a long tail keyword, you just mentioned that a few times in the article. Now it's the words being used. You got to look at the current page one rankings to find out the words that Google is looking at. Now you've got to include that in your content. You've got to build a topical map of all the topics associated with your niche, so Google looks at you as an authority.
Well, yeah.
Today you're just writing a ton of keyword specific articles that it's not going to build your brand.
Yeah, and the thing about being an authority is it's emergent from creating strategic thought leadership, from creating a new model of how to think about your category that genuinely and helpfully empowers an audience to get more out of it or to make a smarter decision or to look at it a new way that's fit in their life a new way, perhaps it's helpful to them and meaningful to them. And then all this amplification is amplifying something that has so much higher impact. So it sounds like a lot of people, looks like a lot of people jump the gun and try to amplify just AI generated content. But the thing about AI, natural language processing, the technology behind these large language models like ChatGPT can also be used by Google, as you mentioned, to do things like understand the true intent behind these search
phrases. That's correct. Search intent is the highest thing that Google's looking for. Not just a keyword phrase, for example, but what was the meaning behind the search?
Yeah, what's the psychology?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's understanding, it always comes down to the psychology of the customer. That's kind of an immutable fact of business. We're here to help people feel better, you know, and get more out of what we offer them.
You know, I've been thinking a lot of this between the thought leadership and the amplification and the networks. Google's in transition now. I think what they're really looking for is the thought leadership strategy approach for content. Customers are looking for that, right? So mm-hmm. they're trying to build all this. And they're getting rid of a lot of the clutter because the clutter doesn't address search intent to the degree it should, right? It doesn't come up with any new thinking. But in the transition, what we want to look at is what is Google really identifying as topical authority? And how do you add your uniqueness to that so that you stand out, but you still rank? And that's what we've been working through the last several months of how do we address that in a way that really helps our new clients benefit from it?
Yeah. And to you, the listener, stay tuned to this channel. And we're actually putting up a landing page currently so people can register for a white paper that's coming out about this integration of strategic thought leadership and search engine optimization. It's going on thoughtleadershipseo.com, and I'm going to link to it on the episode page. If you're listening on app, click the link and it'll take you to it. It's in the description. So Vito, we usually wrap up these interviews in two ways. First of all, thinking about the type of listener we have, the entrepreneur, the solopreneur, the leader, the thought leader, the C-suite, the marketer, what are the top three things you would suggest they do to improve their business, improve their persuasion, improve the results that can only come from you, that they can do right away? Secondly, how would somebody find you if they want to look into what kind of services or working partnerships you could create with you?
Well, they can go to brandvelocity.io, and that's being restructured now a little bit to match what we're doing together in a partnership, and we're aligning that now. The three things, you know, one is you've got to become more an observer of your business than a participant, because when you're a participant, you get very emotional about things if they don't go right. And you're not a problem solver. You got to get more into critical and analytical thinking. That's going to help you almost like be one step ahead to know, right? Like, for example, you know, Google's always changing. So when we researched this, I wanted to provide something that was kind of a lifeboat in a way, right? Mm-hmm. That if a tsunami hits, you're not going to get crushed. And it worked. So it's more. Really understand your customer. And once you become an observer of life, you have to be a good listener. You know, they may not be telling you what you want to hear because it's going to cause a lot of changes maybe or whatever, but that's your money, right? That's your future success. And the person who pays the bills owns you, you know, owns the solution. And they're fickle. If they don't feel they can trust you or you're not doing what they want, they're going to leave and go to somewhere else. The marketplace rules, no matter how we think of different things, right? And the other one is treat your people with respect, hold them accountable, but also, you know, give true praise when it's deserved. Don't be, oh yeah, this is great all the time, because it loses its effect, right? Mm-hmm. If you really treat your people, give them responsibility and tell them that you believe in them and hold them accountable. If they're not doing it, you know, you're in or you're out. There's only 11, what, in a football team, and there's 11 jerseys. Everyone has to do their part. In a startup, you know, you're not like a big company where you can support fluff or people who aren't doing it. Everyone needs to do their job. And there's probably other points too. Don't hire before you understand what the customer wants. You may have people you like, you may have people that do certain things. They may not be part of your future because the customer generates the need and the resources required to deliver on that, right? So you've really got to be objective about your business. And that's really hard sometimes, because you have an emotional attachment to it, but you got to detach from it, you know? Mm-hmm. And the last one, don't ring the bell, okay? I don't know if I talked about this in the book. The Navy SEALs, when they have training, it's the most brutal on earth. It really is. They want the top shelf people, which everyone knows. Well, they have a big bell in the middle of the training. And if someone rings the bell, they can leave. No shame. This means you've had it. You don't want it. And they probably 60, 70% ring the bell, right? So what I say as an entrepreneur, you're going to have some really bad days, right? Don't ring the bell. Get up and say, I've got the grit. If you don't have grit, you're not going to succeed. You got to have the grit to get through the pain, make course corrections quickly, and do what's right for the customer. And that's probably the best way I can. I'm trying to be positive here, but those are the real things that you really need to have.
Yeah, very powerful. Vito, this has been a fascinating conversation, and it's a pleasure also working with you on this collaborative project. Thought Leadership SEO, I think, is going to really change things for people who are willing to commit to something that can be so powerful in marketing. And it's been great sharing your knowledge and your background with our listeners. I really appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate the invitation, and I look forward to completing what we're doing and rolling it out to the public, because I think it'll really help a lot of people.
Fantastic. My pleasure.
Thought Leadership Studio.
So thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this has been Episode 72, Digital Marketing Mastery, an Entrepreneurial Evolution with Vito Santoro, my collaborative partner in ThoughtLeadershipSEO.com. Go there to get the white paper, ThoughtLeadershipSEO.com, and I'm linking to it on the episode page on Thought Leadership Studio. So if you're on an app, it will be linked to in the episode description. And in this episode, we discussed from SEO beginnings to interactive video innovations, the entrepreneurial journey, the inner game of entrepreneurship, cultivating growth beyond the comfort zone, purpose beyond profit, the entrepreneur's journey as a hero's quest, and the comfort zone trap, and how entrepreneurs mistake motion for productivity. Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. Signing off now, and look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
Thought Leadership Studio.